Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. And Xander, what is up, my brother?
Not much. We're kind of grooving right now. We got NHL and NBA playoffs. We're getting into the swing of the MLB season. Got a lot of pre-NFL draft talks. So, I mean, we got quite a bit to talk about today. The first thing I kind of wanted to bring up and kind of get your take, the death of Prince this week. Pretty iconic music performer, and also did a lot in the sporting world, a lot of shows, and an iconic Super Bowl performance, Super Bowl 41 in the rain. I still remember that. I was pretty young, but really special, a really, great performer, one of the best of all time. I wanted to get your take. What did you think of Prince? Did you listen to his music at all? What are your thoughts about him?
Purple Rain, baby. Actually, I thought he was a great guy, and he was probably one of the smartest guys around, because he made money on everything that he did. Because he took care of the production, he did everything, and he was a great guy, big and very involved in Minnesota, and obviously stayed in Minnesota for himself, which was great. And he was a great guy, and he was an iconic figure, as you said. And I think it's great. And it's obviously sad to see him go. I know he had some issues, and I guess they're saying now that it might have been Percocet, an overdose of Percocet because of his pain. And I was surprised, because he was a one of those religions that doesn't take drugs, so I was surprised or anything. And he's never been known as a party type of guy that took that stuff. So very sad, sad for all parts of world music, regular world, and the sporting world.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I was a little bit too young to really know what Prince is all about, but I know some of his great songs. I mean, 1999. Stuff like that. I mean, really enjoyable guy. And looking back and watching some video clips, I mean, the guy could really perform and did it all over the world, all over all the major sports. Never shied away from anything. So, sad to see him go, but it's good to see that all sports, and especially the teams in Minnesota, are honoring him as they should. The next thing, how about Jake Arrieta with another no hitter? The guy in his last 16 starts. It's 15-0 with a 0.53 ERA and two no-hitters. How about that?
I thought that would be your first thing, because you being the Cub fan that you are. But, yeah, no, it is unbelievable, and I was totally wrong. I said before the season started that I didn't think he would have a great year. And, I mean, he still might not have a great year, but he's already got a no-hitter, and he's 4-0, and he seems to be unhittable. And they're now saying, people are talking that he's the number one pitcher in baseball right now. I mean, the performance was unbelievable. He was dominating the entire game, and he said that he didn't have his stuff, but man, he just mixes it up, and it's just it was incredible to watch on Thursday night. I enjoyed it. I typically don't stay up that late to watch, but obviously I couldn't go to bed because I wanted to see him do it. And the guy is just something else. I mean, he's got, I think, an 0.09 ERA or something like that, some ridiculous number. And he just continues to perform. And it's funny because, he's 30 years old. He's due up for a contract in 2 years. He's making about $10 million now. And Baltimore gave up on him. And it's funny. And this goes back to what I've said many, many times when it comes to coaching and managing. You can't change everybody to what you want them to be. You have to sometimes let guys be what they are. And when he came to the Cubs, you know, they didn't try to change his herky-jerky motion, his goofy stuff that he does, where Baltimore kept trying to change him, and look at the difference. Now, obviously, 2 years doesn't make a career, but over the last 2 years, he's certainly been the most dominating pitcher in baseball. What do you think?
Oh, I think 100%. I mean, you know, there was a minor blip in that playoff start last year, but, you know, I mean, besides that, and like you said, his last 16 starts, he's 15-0. I mean, and he's so consistent, and that's what I love about him. I mean, what you want in your ace is a guy you can go out there and, you know, against any team in the league and have a decent shot at winning. And with this Cubs team on absolute fire right now, I mean, Arrieta, I would agree with you, I think is the number one pitcher in the league. I mean, you know, through 119 pitches, 6 Ks, 4 walks, one of the bigger blowouts of all time in a no-hitter. I think it ranked third or fourth for 16-0 games. Cubs said 18 hits. I mean, it was really special. And to think that a guy throws two of them, and I think he actually threw two of them in 11 starts, but, you know, tying to 16 starts and how great that stat line is. I mean, he's unbelievable, and, you know, it's getting me excited for September already. I think I'm going to shoo in the Cubs for a playoff spot.
I think you're probably right. I mean, listen, they did it. They went and kicked St. Louis. They asked 2 out of 3, and they almost came back for the third. But I think the one thing you got to be really happy for is what the hell's his name? The catcher, David Ross.
David Ross
never caught a no hitter. This is his last year. He's retiring. This year he had Jason Hayward picked up his first class accommodations for his hotels and everything, and now he catches a no hitter from Jake Arrieta. What a memorable last season he's having, huh?
Right. I mean, you know, and he's actually hitting the ball. He's hitting .278, only 18 at bats, but it's a far cry from, you know, that sub-200 average of last year. But, yeah, I think David Ross, I mean, on a team like this with a bunch of young guys, I think, you know, not to toot the Cubs' horn or anything, but I think he's another great guy in the mix, but, you know, with the manager Joe Maddon and all these great guys. You know, it's special right now. And I think this Cubs team, I think they're pretty far and away the number one team in the league right now. Completely unbiased opinion. I mean, they're really not hitting the baseball that well. I mean, you look at what Dexter Fowler's doing, and the guy's almost hitting .400. He has been a godsend getting back on the Cubbies this year. But, you know, all the other guys in the lineup, Chris Bryant had a big game the other night, but, you know, he was, you know, sub-250. You know, Anthony Rizzo really hasn't found his form yet. Jason Hayward hasn't really found anything yet. But meanwhile, the Cubs had the biggest run differential in the league by double, and are just pitching the shit out of the ball, and they look poised to make a big run.
Well, I mean, look, I've said this before. Joe Maddon is by far the best manager in baseball. He could possibly be the best manager ever because of how he operates and how he gets the most out of all of his talent. And he thought that?
You know what? I think it's a little too early to call him the best ever, but I think, you know, in today's game, I would definitely consider him the best.
I don't know. I want to interrupt you for 1 second. You know, this isn't just a one-trick pony he did with the Cubs. I mean, he did it with a far inferior Tampa Bay team for years. I mean, he kept bringing a team that was not very good and kept getting him to the playoffs and getting a shot to win when nobody else could win in that market. So, you know, I got to give the guy his props. I mean, this is not a one-year wonder. I mean, he's come to the Cubs, and they're performing and way ahead of schedule. Tampa Bay was always performing. I mean, you know, again, I'm not saying you're wrong. It's obviously only an opinion. It's like when we compare one player to another, you can't really compare, but this guy seems to have it all down, and I can't think of anybody better. You know, it's kind of like Coach G for you. I don't think there's anybody I'd rather play for than the guy Joe Maddon, but we have to step out here for a break, but we'll talk more about it when we come back. This is the Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander, and we want to remind you that when you miss an episode, they're all on demand at libertytalk.fm, so make sure you go check it out whenever you miss a show. In the meantime, also check out the Bubba Show during the week, and that the Bubba Show is also on Liberty Talk FM on demand. But for now, this is the Bubba Show. Excuse me, it's not the Bubba Show. This is the Sporting Edge with Xander and Bubba. We are going to come back after the break. We got a lot more to do, and we'll be right back after the break. The Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. Be right back.
This last bite. You don't get my soul, do you?
Welcome back to the Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. So, Xander, so I was saying, and I'll give you a chance to rebut my answer, but, you know, you had Coach G, and, you know, in your short career, you have found that he has been probably by far the best you've ever had. Other than me, of course. But and then, of course, I think that Joe Maddon is just phenomenal. So go ahead and rebut me, and then we can move on.
No, I'm not going to rebut, but I'm going to say this is a work in progress. If Joe Maddon wins the World Series of the Chicago Cubs, I think he jumps, you know, right near to the top of the list. And I don't want to talk about, you know, World Series or anything or what this team could possibly be, you know, for the next 5 or 10 years. But, I mean, you'd like to think that they've got a decent shot to win at least one. And I think he is a big reason for that. I mean, the guy just, this looks like a guy that you want to be around. And when you're managing professional athletes like that, sometimes, you know, more than a tactical manager, you need a guy who can manage, you know, professionals. And I think that's what Joe Maddon does a great job at. And, you know, it's really awesome to see. You know, let's move on to a little NBA action. The Rockets took Game 3 from the Warriors without Steph Curry. You see that game at all? What were your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I really thought, I mean, I looked at the line, I go, Golden State 6, I will take Houston. Because I thought that was a little inflated. You know, look, it's not surprising. This is the playoffs. This is bump and grind. And of course, you don't have your best player. And you know what the problem is that your best player has a dramatic effect on everybody else, too. Because obviously he lifts everybody else's game. And all of a sudden he's out. So it changes the way they do everything. And, you know, Houston was at home. And, you know, listen, arguably one of the best players in the league, if not the best himself, is Harden. I mean, you know, Curry is great, but Harden can do it all as well. Just not, he doesn't shoot quite as well as Curry, but Harden is some kind of special talent as well. So,
right. You know, I mean, that step back jumper to win the game was, you know, was classic James Harden. Just, you know, shake, dribble, maybe a little push off, but, you know, who's counting? But, I mean, the guy is a great performer. And I thought it was kind of funny. The Rockets bench after he hit that shot was kind of, the emotion was kind of non-existent, and it kind of, I thought it really stood for the Houston Rockets. You know, I think for the most part, being a bunch of pretty selfish guys, but I just thought that was interesting. You know, a guy hits basically a game winner, and the whole bench just looks like, you know, their best friend got shot. I thought that was funny.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, when you look at it, you got to understand it, but certainly. I expect Golden State to probably go on and win the next two. Now, I'll have to do with Curry, whether he comes back. But even without him, they're certainly good enough to win. And, you know, the other series, it's been a really crappy playoff system so far. What do you think? I mean, it's been all blowouts, basically.
Yeah, you know, it hasn't been great. One series I'm really looking forward to seeing, I think it's going to happen, is the Miami Heat versus the Cleveland Cavaliers. I know we're only a couple games into each of these series, but, I mean, the Miami Heat are playing some type of way right now, and I would really like to see that lineup match up with Cleveland. I mean, you look at the guys on the Heat right now, you know, you got Joe Johnson, Luol Deng, or, you know, and Dwayne Wade, who are all, you know, very, very great veterans of this league. And Dwayne Wade, it looks like he's turned back the clock a little bit. And with a guy like Hassan Whiteside in the paint, and Goran Dragic, you know, bringing up the ball, I think this has a chance to be a really good series. And also, on the other side of that, I'm still looking forward to Spurs-Warriors, but don't count out OKC yet. I mean, you know, that Game 1 win was impressive, and, of course, everybody's talking them up, and the Mavs come and steal Game 2, but Game 3 was an absolute blowout. I mean, they win 131-102. Kevin Durant finally performed a little better than his 7-for-33 performance in Game 2, but, I mean, when Durant and Westbrook are on, I mean, that is a really scary team.
Oh, there's nothing like it. And, of course, this will be most likely their last year together because I think we'll be seeing Durant go bye-bye for sure. So, but, you know, overall, you know, not real exciting. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see how it plays. I mean, okay, you see, listen, the combo is awfully good, and I certainly agree with you. And, you know, as we look at hockey, our Blackhawks are able to stave off elimination in two overtimes. So what do you think of that?
I had my finals this week, so I was in the library studying. You know, I was keeping track of the game on my computer, and I actually got done studying, walked into my friend's house literally a half a second before Kane scored that goal. So I was greeted by, you know, a bunch of hugs and a bunch of beer cans, and it was awesome. I mean, I didn't see the shot live, but I saw the replay, and, you know, I know the hockey's not too big on this show, but what an individual effort by Patrick Kane, first at the deep to get in front of the net and skating all the way back around. I mean, I haven't watched too much hockey in my life, but that was something unlike I've ever seen. I mean, the individual effort And, you know, the Blackhawks, everybody's saying, don't let them win game five, because I think they're going to go on a run now. I mean, this team, I mean, you can never count the Blackhawks out. You look at the best team in the NHL over the past 7 years, it's definitely the Hawks. And I think they got three world championships, three cups, excuse me. I need to get my lingo down. But, I mean, this is going to be a tough series, I think, for St. Louis to win now. There's a lot of momentum. Patrick Kane finally getting the goal. I mean, it's going to be interesting stuff, and I think I'll definitely tune in for Game 6.
You know, I think you're probably right, and you know, we'll see how it plays out. And as you're right, we don't do a lot of hockey here, so I do know that you had some NFL draft stuff. What do you got?
Well, we had another big trade this week, and I actually want to give a shout out to Pete Prisco, a writer for CBS Sports, actually called this a couple weeks ago, saying that the Eagles would trade up for the number 2 pick, and that is exactly what happened this week. They traded with the Browns down to number 8, and I have to say, I love what the Browns did. I mean, I really didn't think that, you know, they wanted to draft one of the quarterbacks in the top 2. I mean, Cleveland, I feel like, is where quarterbacks go to die, and, you know, I think they might want to give RG3 a shot and see what he's got, but I think they definitely made some strides into, you know, finally turning this franchise around. I mean, you know, they're 19-45 since Jimmy Haslam has taken over. I mean, they really have looked like one of the worst teams in the league year in and year out. They took home a big haul, and, you know, got a first rounder next year and also a second rounder. I think they got 3 picks in the top 80. So I think this is a great move for them, and there is still talk that they might still be looking at Paxton Lynch at number 8. I don't know if they're going to actually take him, but overall, I love the move for Cleveland. Philadelphia, not so much. I mean, that's a big sellout to get up to the number 2 pick for, you know, a couple guys who are good, I think, and have, you know, had the right intangibles, but I really don't know, you know, how they're going to transition to the NFL. And, you know, Sam Bradford kind of voiced his opinion this week saying, you know, he's kind of unhappy with the move, you know, signifying that they are going to take probably Carson Wentz if he's available, if not Jared Goff, with that second pick. So I think that was a really interesting move by Philly, you know, but you give them credit. They went all out, and they got the pick they wanted, but I think they gave up quite a bit, and I think this move is great, a great move for the Cleveland Browns.
I hope so. Cleveland deserves a winner, and, you know, I'm all for them. I mean, you know, I go back to the Brian Sipe days of Cleveland when Elway kept beating him on the end zone, and you know, interesting. But I do think it's a great trade. I think I don't know what's with Philadelphia. I mean, it looks like they're going into the, you know, back into the dumping everything and trying to start over again. And, you know, I can't blame them, because I never thought they were very good anyways. And, you know, Chip Kelly's system was, you know, is gone, and he tried to get players to fit that system. But, again, I don't believe that system really works that well in the NFL. What do you think?
Right. You know, I don't want to judge the entire system. I think it didn't work very well. I didn't know if he had the right athletes for it. You know, it definitely was a struggle to watch at times. But I didn't know if DeMarco Murray was the right fit for that offense. And Sam Bradford kind of struggled. A couple young receivers, and Jordan Matthews and Nelson Aguilar. But I think that the offense still has talent. I mean, I know DeMarco Murray left, but, I mean, Brent Celek, I think, really came on strong at the end of the year. And Jordan Matthews quietly has developed, I think, into one of the top 15 receivers in the league. And Nelson Aguilar, I didn't have a spectacular rookie season, but, I mean, the guy, if you watch him at USC at all, obviously has a lot of talent. So I think this Eagles team, I do think they're in a little bit of trouble. I don't think their defense is formidable enough to compete in the NFC East this year, but, you know, Maybe Carson Wentz is that next guy who's a franchise quarterback, and I can't quite say yet, but, you know, I really do feel a little bit for Laremy Tunsil. I mean, 2 weeks ago he was a shoe-in for a number 1 pick. I thought is, you know, one of the best left tackles coming out of school in a long time, and now it looks like he slides down the draft board a little bit, because with the top 2 picks being quarterbacks, he kind of takes a fall. And actually, some guys in CBS had him dropping out of the top 10. A couple guys have him at 6 going to the Baltimore Ravens, which I think would be a great fit for him. I mean, it's been a struggle.
Hold that. Hold that thought. We'll come back and talk about the console on the way back. This is the Sporting Edge with Bub and Xander. We're going to step out here for a break. You missed an episode. LibertyTalk.fm on demand. The Sporting Edge with Bub and Xander. We'll be right back after the break.
trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got the Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Welcome back to the Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. And Xander, you were talking about Jeremy Kunsel and the number one pick. What's going on? So give us the finish of your story there, young man.
Yeah, well, I was saying that it looks like, you know, he could possibly go at number six to the Ravens, which I think would be a great addition, because if you had Joe Flacco on your fantasy team in the past 2 years, it's been kind of hard to watch how much he's been beaten up in the pocket. I could also see him going at number three, but I think that's going to be a toss-up between Jalen Ramsey, the quarterback, cornerback or safety, whatever you want to label them as, from Florida State, and Laramie Tunsil. I think those guys, you know, overall value are the two best players in this draft. I don't think you can go wrong for the Chargers, but, you know, they have spent a lot of money on their offensive line the last couple of years, and I think it would make sense to take Ramsey, who I think is going to be an immediate impact defender wherever he goes. It looks like Joey Bosa is the most likely play for the Cowboys, which I think makes also a lot of sense, you know, considering, you know, how disappointing the Greg Hardy situation turned out and the Randy Gregory situation, which seems like it's always ongoing. So I think Bosa is a great fit there. It looks like Miles Jack, probably the best linebacker in this draft, from UCLA going to Jacksonville. And we take a look at number 11, our Bears, looking like they might take Ronnie Stanley, an offensive tackle from Notre Dame. So, I mean, we've had a lot of shakeups the past couple of weeks, and it's really interesting, you know, how much teams are willing to move up the draft board, you know, and it could be a matter of a couple picks. I mean, you see 5-3 sometimes, but this recent deal was 8-2 for the Philadelphia Eagles, and we'll see how it works out. But right now, I'm on the Cleveland Browns side of that trade.
You know, I'm definitely clear. Listen, anytime you get a big number of draft picks, that's the side you have to be on, because this is not a normal game. Okay, there's too many injuries in football. There's too many things that go on. And, you know, you need bodies, and you need good bodies. You need the opportunity to get. I mean, look at the Cowboys. I mean, you know, granted they've kind of, you know, fell apart last year without Romo, but their offensive line, if you were back there a quarterback, they might have been able to survive. You know, just that Braden Wheaton sucks, and that's unfortunate because their offensive line, I mean, they built that line through the draft and continue to do so. And as you know, in football, it's really about the trenches. I mean, you need somebody who knows how to play. And again, Braden Wheaton, I have nothing against the guy personally, but he just is not a quarterback. He's not a professional quarterback, okay? He was a great college quarterback in those systems, but you could see that he just couldn't get it done, and, you know, had plenty of time to do it, just couldn't make the throw. So, you know, you have to build these teams over the long haul, and I think that's the bigger problem that we don't see often enough and don't give enough credit to these guys for building these teams that way. Because, you know, again, look at Denver last year. Without the offensive defensive line, they don't win the Super Bowl. I mean, Peyton Manning was like nobody back there. It was like having no quarterback, and they still managed to win the Super Bowl. So, you agree?
Right. And speaking of defense, you know, this week, cornerback Josh Norman had a franchise tag offer rescinded by the Carolina Panthers on Wednesday, making him an unrestricted free agent. And I wanted to get your thoughts on this, because I thought for a team that was you know, this close, you know, my fingers are almost touching, to winning a Super Bowl, and they're letting go of one of the best defenders in the league, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I mean, a team that's built on defense, I know Cam Newton's great, but like we just said with Denver, I mean, you know, Peyton Manning, you know, was very, very far from the Peyton Manning we used to know and love back there, and they still won the game because of their dominant defense. So I was surprised to see Josh Norman slip out of the fingers of the Carolina Panthers when he was such an integral part of their success this season.
Well, I think sometimes ego comes into play, and sometimes, you know, we all know Riverboat Ron, and he's got a pretty big ego himself, and, you know, sometimes that gets in the way of it, and, you know, guys go, and that happens. You know, obviously he's great. I mean, he's the, you know, Darrell Revis, and, you know, so it's sad. It's unfortunate for them, but, you know, listen, all I know is somehow they managed to get there without any receivers. I mean, it was amazing. So I'm sure they'll figure it out, and that is the one thing about football, and I think nobody's proved it more than the New England Patriots, is you just keep plugging in guys. If you run a good system and you run a good team, they're going to find ways to win.
Right, and I think it's interesting that it looks like the Redskins and the 49ers are the two teams of most interest right now, and it, you know, reports are saying that the Redskins have a very legit offer on the table. And it'd be something else if Norman went to the Redskins, because remember the battles he had last year with Dez Bryant and Odell Beckham. He'd now be playing in the same division as them, and that's something I'd want to watch on Sunday, because Josh Norman, great guy, fiery guy, great personality, and Dez Bryant and Odell Beckham too. I mean, they in their own respective ways are, you know, very outgoing, and it'd be interesting to see Josh Norman take on those guys, you know, four or five games a year. But you're moving on a little bit. Conor McGregor, if you heard anything about him this past week, you know, people thought he was retired, and he came out and said he wasn't retired. I didn't read the entire story. It was kind of confusing the way he worded everything, but it looks like he sent out a tweet yesterday morning basically calling out the UFC, saying it's your move whether you want to put me back in UFC 200.
It's amazing, isn't it? And there's been a lot of talk about it every day. You know, is he doing this? Is this a show? Whatever. It's really unbelievable what's going on there. You know what I mean?
Right. And the thing we talked about Conor McGregor after that loss to Nate Diaz, and how I was kind of more surprised being a decent, decently large UFC fan, how humble he was after taking that loss. You know, he was so brash in the months before leading up, and so cocky, and I think a lot of people kind of got tired of him. But, I mean, that's the thing. Conor McGregor is one of the more polarizing athletes, I think, on the face of the earth right now. And this whole situation, a little foggy still, but he is not retired. He wants to fight. And I think Dana White might have to let him back in the UFC 200, and here's why. UFC, I think, is one of the only professional sports in the world that I think is really controlled by the fighters. I mean, when you look at the value of their performance, I mean, these guys fight, you know, once every 3 months. They have these huge cards only a few times a year. And, you know, a guy like Conor McGregor, even after that loss, is still, I think, one of the UFC's biggest drawing cards. I think it'd be foolish to leave him out, because everybody wants to see him fight. I want to see him take on Nate Diaz again, because I personally think he's going to beat the crap out of him. But, you know, anyways, I think Dana White would be foolish not to put him back, because, you know, like I said, whether you like him or you hate him, you want to see him perform. And I think that's the great thing about Conor McGregor, is he never shies away from a camera. You know, everybody wants to watch what he's doing, and I think, you know, it'd be great to see him get in UFC 200, because, you know, he's such a great fighter and one of the, you know, more, like I said, most polarizing athletes out there, and everybody wants to see him fight. So I think it'd be foolish to leave him out, and that's my 2 cents on the UFC for the week.
Well,
I think we got
other big. Everybody talks about it. It's one of the biggest sports there is, so it's good to have it. Go ahead.
So I think we better move on to baseball now, because I know that's the thing we like to talk about most during baseball season. And, you know, not talking about teams or how anybody's doing first, but I wanted to go over you know, a few pitchers, a couple of big name pitchers that are struggling so far this season, and those guys are Corey Kluber, Chris Archer, and Shelby Miller. Now, you know, if you've seen these guys,
can I throw one more in where you're talking about him?
Sure.
How about Matt Harvey?
How about him? Another one.
And I have two of them. I have two of them on my fantasy team. But yeah, go ahead.
So, I mean, these guys are just don't look good right now. And Corey Kluber, I think, is the one guy. I think he's going to turn it around, because if you look at him historically, he always starts off slow. I mean, his ERA career-wise is always the worst in April. And I think right now he's just struggling to find the zone a little bit. I mean, the guy is really overpowered. One of the more overpowering pitchers in baseball, I think, with an upper 90s fastball and one of the best sliders in the game. I think he turns it around, because I think if you look at him historically, and like a chart, always reverts back to the mean. Right. And I think Corey Kluber picks it up.
Hold on one second. We'll get the other ones after the break, but I want to comment on Kluber right now, because this is you don't remember this. There was a guy that his name was Joey Bell, and then he changed his name to Albert Bell. And it was Albert, don't call me, Joey Bell. And he was a big-time hitter. But you know what? He only hit when it didn't mean anything at the end of the season. He was always like a 340 and 120 every year. But when they needed him, he could never perform. Corey Kluber is starting to remind me of this. Every year they come out, and in the beginning of the year, he's a Cy Young candidate. He's going to be the best. Cleveland's going to be great because they got great pitching. And every year he stinks up the joint. He can't get anybody out. Now, you tell me, when a guy is playing, you know, it's not like it was when these guys were coming out of shape, 30 pounds overweight, and wear a plastic bag for 3 weeks and take all that weight off and get in shape. These guys work out every day, all year round. They're paid millions and millions of dollars. This guy, to me, just don't have the heart or the guts to be a big-time pitcher, because with his skill and his talent, he reminds me of somebody who just can't get it out of him. He has no heart. That's what I'm trying to say. To me, now again, I took him because I bought into all the hype as well, and I'm sure for my fantasy league, he'll be fine, because at the end of the year, he will revert back to the mean. But he never pitches. That's why they struggle every year in April, because this guy can't get off his ass and can't put together a good winning streak. That's my two cents. But this is the Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. And, of course, Xander got my IR up going here. But we will be back after the break. Make sure if you ever miss a show, LibertyTalk.fm gets you the Sporting Edge as well as the Bubba Show. We will step out for a break. This is the Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. We'll be right back after the break. The Sporting Edge. Welcome back to the Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. Okay, Xander, go ahead now. Make your point. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I couldn't take anymore.
No, I think we said enough there. I personally think he's going to turn it around. I say he ends the season with 15 wins, but you know, we'll see. Time will tell. I mean, this Cleveland team is, you know, about 500 right now, so we'll see where the division breaks. I mean, the Sox and the Royals look good, but like I said, first 2 weeks of the season, it's still early. Nothing drastic has happened yet. But the next guy I wanted to talk about was Chris Archer. You know, if you saw Chris Archer pitch last year, one of the best young pitching phenoms in the game. Great fastball, great slider, similar to Corey Kluber. But, you know, he's 0-4 right now and with a pretty subpar ERA. And my take on Chris Archer is his location just isn't there right now. I mean, a guy who likes to get ahead with the fastball, he's not doing that this year. And major league hitters, you know, when they're ahead in the count, I mean, they just sit on pitches, and they're the best at what they do. You can throw as hard as you want. You know, the hardest throwing guys of all time have gotten hit when they don't throw strikes, and I think that's where Chris Archer needs to focus on now. He needs to get ahead. I mean, he's got some great movement on his ball, throws in the mid-90s, has a great two-seamer and four-seamer, but right now, he's just not really finding the zone, and I think that's his major problem. Have you seen him throw it all this year yet?
Yeah, he's just, again, he's a different guy. He's actually a stud. He just is having a rough time right now, and you know, I can't figure it out. But he will figure it out, in my opinion.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, considering what he did last year, I don't think that was a fluke at all. I mean, the guy is a great pitcher, and you know, early in the season, I don't think you can write people off just yet. And the third guy I wanted to bring up, who I don't think is as much of a star status as Chris Archer, but nonetheless, Shelby Miller is having a really, really rough start to this year. I mean, him and Zach Greinke, I mean, I think that's the major reason why the Diamondbacks are not doing so hot right now. And on the other side of that coin, Shelby Miller, I was reading a couple articles, watching a couple of videos. The thing that looks wrong with him is his mechanics. I mean, he's all over the place. And like Chris Archer, is just not throwing strikes. And when you don't have a consistent release point, that just makes it even harder to throw strikes in the first place, and he's doing neither of those. And Shelby Miller, I don't know if he figures it out by the end of the year. I mean, I think he's a great young pitcher. I think he will end his MLB career as a very good pitcher. But what I'm seeing so far this year, I don't think those problems are that easy to correct. And I think, you know, he better put his nose to the grindstone if they want to turn this around, because I think Arizona is counting on him.
I think he figures it out. He got into some bad habit where he was scraping the ground, which is, doesn't make sense. And, of course, he's another one of my pitchers. So there's three of my pitchers that suck right now. I think he will figure it out. I mean, these are professional athletes, and he got into a bad habit, and somebody will straighten him out. And really, to me, it would be something you'd go back to. You'd go to the Jake Arrieta school and say, hey, just pitch the way you pitched and not worry about all this other stuff, because, you know, he's got a lot of good stuff, but, you know, he has been around the block a little bit as well, because obviously he does find some issues. But I definitely think he will figure it out, in my opinion, as well. I think he'll be good. And how about my other prediction in MLB? I made two predictions. Well, I made a couple. I made more than two, but I made two big ones. And I could have had both guys. And I obviously, Arrieta, we talked about. And I said, I thought Bryce Harper would struggle this year. Oh, boy. See, he is tearing it up right now. And he looks like he's just locked in. I mean, he looks like he's going to just have a monster year. And, of course, the monster year is going to get him about... I don't know, $400 million next year, I think. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it'll be enough to be pretty happy over his lifetime. But honestly, Bryce Harper looks even better than he did last year when he won the MVP, and that's scary, because this Nationals team playing really well. And you know, I don't want to count out anybody, but I mean, if they're playing this hot, the Mets need to figure out something, because I mean, I still think they have a very good team. But, I mean, the DeGrom injury issue, Matt Harvey struggling a little bit, offense not looking very good. You know, Noah Syndergaard has been awesome this year. But I think they need to come together a little bit more, because this Nationals team, I think, you know, this could be a year there for real. I mean, they've got Steven Strasburg right now is 3-0 with a 1-2-5 in his contract year. So they got a lot of pieces. And looking at, you know, CBS Sports power rankings for baseball, I mean, we still got the Cubs at 1, KC at 2. The Texas Rangers come in at number 3 right now, and Yu Darvish is scheduled to come back soon. I think that makes the Rangers a very scary team.
Well, my man Cole Hamels, baby. You know, he hasn't lost his start, I think, in 17 or 18 starts.
I did not know that, but it doesn't surprise me.
The team he's on has not lost. Going back to Philadelphia, has not lost in his last 17 or 18 starts. So, I mean, look, I like the Rangers. I actually bet the Rangers to win it. So there you go. I took 20-1 on the Rangers. And I never make that. I never would have made the bet anyways. I was there, so I made it. But, you know, I think a bigger surprise is I think Houston is really struggling this year. What do you think about them?
Yeah, they have not looked good at all. You know, the pitching hasn't really been there. I think a couple of those big hit or miss guys on offense, they're really not playing well right now. So I mean, Houston, like we said, it's early still, but I mean, we get after the first month, you kind of see what direction teams are heading in. And Houston right now, I mean, they're barely floating above water, and I have not been impressed so far. But one team that has really impressed me this year is the Chicago White Sox. Like I said before, I am a Cubs fan first, but I do like my Chicago team, so I'm very glad to see the White Sox are doing well. And it's funny, because they're doing well, and they're hitting like crap. I mean, typical White Sox, scoring one or two runs a game, but they do look very good. And like we talked about, that big three of, you know, Jose Quintana, I think, one of the most underrated number twos in baseball. You know, this team, I think, has some potential. And you look at Todd Frazier right now. This guy's hitting .180, and the Sox team is still playing really well. I think they're 11-6. So if he could happen to turn it around and get this offense going a little bit, this is another scary team. But the thing I worry about with Todd Frazier, I mean, the guy hit .220 after the All-Star break last season. So is it a slump, or, you know, what is it? And it kind of worries me, because, you know, he's one of the big bats in that offense that needs to perform, you know, along with guys like Jose Abreu. So, I mean, Todd Frazier is a key component to that team, you know, if they want to win. And it's going to be tough keeping pace with Kansas City, because I like the Cubs. They're one of the most complete teams in baseball.
Oh, I agree. Chris Sale is having a monster, and he's finally getting rewarded for some of his starts because, you know, he's pitched like this forever, but he didn't get the wins. Now he's getting the wins. So I'm happy for him, and I wish I would have taken him, and I could have, but I didn't. But I think that he's probably one of the best pitchers in the league, and they do have and how about Latos? He's been just on fire, and he's, you know, he was a pig last year, but all of a sudden he showed up. But I know, I think I want to talk about the Nationals. Look at what's happened there. You know, Dusty Baker comes in, basically the same team. Okay, in fact, probably maybe not as good a team. And all of a sudden, they're playing great. You know, again, that goes back to how you manage and control a team. What do you think about that?
Yeah, you know, I've always been a big fan of Dusty Baker. I think, I mean, he seems like a pretty good guy. And he's got this national team playing on a roll right now. But, you know, the thing about the first few weeks of the season is, you know, call me in September and see where we're at with the Nationals. Because, you know, over the past 4 or 5 years, I'd say you could put them up there and, you know, one of the most disappointing teams in the league when it comes to, you know, the playoffs and making some noise. So they're playing some great baseball right now, scoring a lot of runs, playing good defense. So we'll see. But, I mean, the Mets are a few games behind right now. I wouldn't count them out. I mean,
I would never count the Mets out, and I hate to cut you short because obviously we're running out of time, but I will leave you with this thought, okay? When I forget his name already, but when the other guy was managing him before he retired and stepped down, they were always in the hunt, and in fact, that's when they shut down Strasburg, figuring they'd be back again, and then they forced him out, and they brought in Matt Williams, and they became shit. And now they got Dusty Baker back, and they're playing good. I mean, they do have some unbelievable players, obviously Harper and Scherzer, to name them. But unfortunately, the show went by so fast today. We got so much more to go. We need another couple hours. But that'll do it for the Sporting Edge today. This is Bubba and Xander bringing you the Sporting Edge. And make sure when you miss an episode, libertytalk.fm, you go download it. We've got over 200,000 people downloading it now. We want to get to 3. We need your help. So go check it out. Also check out The Bubba Show. This is The Sporting Edge with Bubba and Zinner. Everybody have a great weekend. We'll see you back here next weekend, here right here on The Sporting Edge with Bubba and Zinner. Have a great weekend, everybody. Thank you.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.